And now, get ready to get pulled off sides by the hard count. Hosted by two guys who babble more than Manning at the line of scrimmage.
Brown, right, orange, purple!
Here's Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm friggin' velvety smooth.
Are you not entertained?
Welcome, folks, to another edition of The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. With me, next to me, my co-host with the mo-ho-ho-host, Aaron Nagler. Aaron, how's it going, man?
It's going, but if I read another freaking lockout update, I am going to freaking murder someone. So look out. You better hope I don't open any internet browsers while we are recording.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It seems as though perhaps we've run out of news. I was joking with Dave Goldberg on Twitter the other day, and we were talking about the Derek Jeter 3 billionth hit or whatever in a home run, and right. the young man who gave back the baseball, and New York hates him for that for some reason, and oh, by the way, he's going to get taxed. And I was like, good Lord, come on. All right, he hit his home run, let's move past. And Goldberg's like, well, I don't know, not much to talk about. And I'm like, I guess journalism, like nature, abhors a vacuum. There's no NFL news except for the CBA, and we've beaten that to death. So I guess we got to fill it with nonsense.
Speaking of nonsense, here's the latest, ladies and gentlemen. The league has been trumpeting the fact that they are close to a deal. The players this morning, led by three of the lead plaintiffs in their lawsuit against the league, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees, issued a statement saying, this is now the time to make a deal. The time has come to make a deal. Drew Brees was quoted on the radio this morning saying they are very close to a deal. All day, people were saying they're close to a deal. The time for a deal has come. And then this evening, Mike Silver of Yahoo Sports dropped a big stink bomb in the middle of all this optimism.
Damn you, Silver!
With quotes from the player side saying, no, they aren't close, there's lots of sticking points left, blah, 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 blah. Now let me tell you something. I put something up on Cheesehead TV today, wherein I state, if we are to lose any regular season games, if this is to happen, ladies and gentlemen, NFL fans all over the world, you have my permission to blame the owners. I have been steadfastly in the middle during the lockout, trying to take in both sides of the argument. But now we have reached the point where the owners have gotten the concessions that they want out of the players, be it the all revenue idea where the players have gone from receiving 60% of the revenue, actually 53%, after you take off the $1 billion off the top, which the league was doing under the old CBA. Now they'll be getting somewhere close to 48%, a lot less than that when teams have to take out expense credits for stadium construction. So they've gotten that. They've gotten most likely a new year-round Thursday night game, which obviously players and coaches hate due to the fact that it allows them a lot less time to prepare and heal up from the prior week. But it will provide a lot more revenue to be splitting up between the parties. Concession after concession on the player side. The league has not really moved at all, except for the fact that they've reportedly agreed to a salary cap and floor that requires them to spend very close to 100% in cash on the floor, rather than, using accounting tricks to never, to pay a lot less than what the cap requires. Now, with the players' concessions and their moves toward the middle, the owners now are simply trying to squeeze out every last drop out of the players, every last possible nickel they can get out of this, which is, understandable from a business negotiation standpoint. However, deadlines spur action. The deadline is fast approaching, where if they go much longer, the reports are they want to agree to a deal so that they can have the owners vote on it August 21st at the owners' meeting. If they cannot get this done and games are lost, in the aftermath, the owners are to blame. Do not make any mistake. They have gotten all the concessions they need to, quote-unquote, fix what they called a broken model. We're there. They've got what they need. What I find interesting, the two things that are supposedly holding up this deal, the rookie wage scale, along with the, you know, funding of retirement benefits. Everybody wants to take care of the retired players, but nobody wants to pay for it. It's time for someone, anyone on both sides to step up. It is time to close the deal. Roger Goodell, Maurice Smith, it is time to grab the coffee.
Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
So the big question is, Aaron, do we have closers here? And you're right. It's what you said today, and what Silver's talking about. Albert Breer was on Twitter earlier saying that, you know, the small things are moving along. It's the small things getting tied up. It's the big things that are holding things up. I mean, honestly, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, I don't understand why the former player benefits are on the table in a CBA. I understand why they all want them there, because you're right. Nobody wants to pay for these things. So they're all trying to get each other to pay for it, which is kind of where, you know, why we're here we're anyway, because the big market owners and the small market owners want the players to pay for their differences. So it's all a vicious circle. It never ends, which is what makes it a circle and vicious. But the problem is that, you know, you're right. They've got all of these things that they wanted. Not as much as they wanted, but they've gotten so many things that they wanted, it's time to give. It's time for the owners to give a little bit. And frankly, you know, this was the concern we had when they had the appellate court decision on Friday, is that some of the owners would say, okay, now is time to crush the union. Now is time to lay the hammer down. And a lot of media people were like, you know what? They're not stupid enough to do that. It's not going to happen. I feel like maybe that's part of what's going on right here, Aaron. I mean, do you agree with me?
I do, unfortunately. I think it was funny. Jason Cole at Yahoo had a piece up last week about how the presence of Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones would portend good things in the end, that they were deal makers, and they were, as we were just talking about, closers, and would be able to get a deal done. Well, I think we're about to see that theory put to the test. I don't doubt for a second that, you know, things are close and that there are one or two sticking points remaining and they are very hard to get through. But they're not that hard. I mean, come on, people. I know we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars for each percentage point and it's not monopoly money, but it's football. You're not curing cancer. You're not fixing the roads or the infrastructure of the country or something along those lines. It's football. It's business and it's football, and they just need to get it done.
Well, and, you know, the two things you were talking about that they seem to be hung up on, the former player benefits, which we'll touch on in a little bit, and the rookie wage scale / contract length, which is apparently what the holdup is, are things that really shouldn't be this hard to figure out. I mean, at this point, it really shouldn't be this difficult to do those two things.
Well, it's like I said on Cheesehead TV the other day, in regards to the rookie wage scale, the thing that's holding it up, reportedly, is that fifth year in the first round deals. Seriously. And if you break it down even further, it's really the top 15 picks that the two sides are quibbling over. So you're dealing with 1,500 players, 1,300 players, however many, roughly around in that number, and you're going to let 15 guys, 15 slots, you know, possibly, you know, affect the 2011 season. I understand you're thinking long term and you're trying to carve out a deal, but at some point, the owners have got to move or accept what the players are offering. Because like I said, the players have moved. The players have all they could ever do. All DeMaurice Smith could ever do here is keep as much as he could and play defense. And he's done that. And he's done a much better job than I ever thought he would. But he can't realistically move much further. It's time for the owners to make a deal. And that in regards to the rookie pay scale or retiree benefits. And speaking of retiree benefits, we got our good old friend Jerry Kramer in the news yesterday. When asked about Drew Brees and some of Drew Brees' comments last week about guys who are retired needing to find work and needing to get a job, Jerry Kramer done went off. And here's part of the problem on the player side. Jerry Kramer was calling Drew Brees an idiot and stupid, and Leroy Butler apparently agreed and also called Drew Brees stupid. How do you not, if you're an owner, sit back and just let these two pummel themselves to death and just wait it out? I mean, I can sit here and say the owners need to make a deal. But when you see the two sides on the player's end fighting like this, why would you ever make a deal? Why would you not just let them, you know, sit there, haggle amongst themselves, beat each other down, and just wait for the players to cave? Because they clearly, you know, they, as much as they want to, you know, trumpet their one-team mantra, when you've got somebody as high-profile as Jerry Kramer calling Drew Brees, who is one of the, you know, named plaintiffs in the player's suit against the league, an idiot and stupid and a moron. Sorry, it just destroys your entire argument that you are one team.
Well, here's the problem, Aaron, and this is the former player's contention, and there's validity to it, is that they're not part of this team. Here's what gets me about this, though. All right, and I said this in the comment section on Cheesehead TV on that article. Just, this has become, I don't know, if you out there are involved enough in social media and the internet and waste a lot of time on the computer, you will have heard the term.
It's not wasting. Come on.
You have heard the term internet meme, which is to say something that is done once on the internet, we all found amusing or found annoying or found whatever, and then beat it into the ground in various ways, shapes, and form. Drew Brees is the CBA internet meme. In like March, he did an interview wherein he basically said, and this is the part that's always excised and used by owners, by media people with some knives out, and by veteran players like Kramer. Essentially, these guys have handled their money badly, and we shouldn't have to pay for that. Shouldn't have to pay for their bad decisions. What everybody misses is the rest of the interview, where Brees says that's not the case for everyone. There are plenty of guys who have given themselves to the game, who are suffering badly, who need our help. We should do everything for the players. There's just certain ways to do it. Let's be smart about it. Brees was far more fair than anyone who has come out and attacked him on this ever gives him credit for. And nobody bothers to correct this ever at all. And none of these, at this point, you know, it's like the how long before the lie becomes reality? You know, the lie is that Drew Brees has no respect for the former players, and nothing is farther from the truth. And I'll tell you what, and I made this point in the comments too, I can guarantee you that Kramer and company don't really want to be supporting Travis Henry's 50 kids. You know, they don't want to be supporting Maurice Claret's, you know, rehab. I mean, there's a lot of guys who are current players who probably wouldn't be people that Kramer and such would want to support once they had veteran status. Maurice Claret's not going to have veteran status, never did. But, I mean, you get my idea. Antonio Cromartie and his 45 kids he can't name. You know, all of that. There are tons of players who do not live their lives the way these guys want, are not smart with their money. I mean, we've heard three or four situations with former players who have gone bust because of bad investments. You know, not and like recent former players, not like guys who gave the game up.
You've even got guys who are still in the league, barely, but you've got like Mark Brunell. Look what happened to Mark Brunell. So I can understand what you're saying about Drew Brees, but I can understand the anger from the retired players when they see a Jamarcus Russell getting paid ridiculous amounts of muscle. Ridiculous amounts of money. And, you know, now he's off with Johnny Jolly drinking the purple drink. And, you know, these guys are getting $120 a month
right
on disability.
Yeah. I am for, you know, you got $9 billion. How $1 billion just isn't taken off the top 1 year and put into some sort of fund for the players in perpetuity. Yep. I don't understand how that doesn't happen. My point is, though, and I'm not blaming necessarily Kramer, because, again, at this point, the lie has become truth.
Yeah.
The Drew Brees has become this target, and it doesn't matter what he says, and it doesn't matter if you go and tell Kramer or anyone else who's come out about this in the last 3, 4, 5 months, this is really what he said. They're not going to change their tune. It's part of the PR battle. And I don't blame the former players for it, because you know what? Before now, neither owner nor current players have really listened to what's going on with them. I mean, really, really listened and reacted. They talk.
They talk a lot.
They talk a lot. But words are air. And actions have, you know, actions have real weight to them. And they haven't made any actions worth a damn. And honestly, at this point, fair is fair. And you watch the owners slinging mud and the players slinging mud. It's no real shock, and nor can I blame the former players for slinging mud too, because if they don't now, if this CBA gets locked up in 5 years, even more, 10 years, they're not going to get another shot at it. If they can't force their way in now, they're never going to do it. It's just, it's unfortunate, because I think Brees takes a lot of heat for something that he didn't exactly mean, although he could have phrased what he said far more carefully. As is the case with an awful lot of players who have a lot of free time on their hands.
Well, let's go there. Speaking of players with a lot of time on their hands and needing to phrase things a little better, how about that outside linebacker down there in Pittsburgh? Holy cow!
First of all, let's just start. I believe Greg Bedard, Patriot reporter, which sounds actually like he works for Fox, which may not be the best place to work for right now, Fox News. But he's really upset about the picture with Harrison, because now he doesn't know what to do for his Christmas card pictures. Harrison, if you haven't seen it, and you can find it on the web, there's an excerpt from the interview on the web. And there's Mr. James Harrison.
Buff.
Yeah, buff, toting, ripped up, showing off his guns and showing off his guns. I can't remember who said it today, and I'm sorry if you are listening. Someone on Twitter today said, if the season's on, there is no way in hell that the Pittsburgh PR staff lets that picture happen. There is no way. There are so many things wrong with that picture.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I don't care. I mean, I really don't care. But from an NFL, you know, the Shield standpoint, there are so many things wrong with that picture.
Yep.
I can't even begin to tell you.
Well, here's the thing, and Mike Freeman wrote a quick blog post about it this morning, which I could not agree more with. Yes, Harrison, if you have no clue what we're talking about, A, I'm shocked. B, go check out the latest edition of, what is it, Men's Journal? I don't even know. That's how bad it is. Men's Health or Men's Journal or Men's something. James Harrison is on it.
Men's Journal.
Men's Journal.
I actually do have the article here in front of me, and just Men's refusing Journal. To refer to it.
Men's Journal. Harrison goes off on Roger Goodell. He goes off on the Patriots. He goes off on his own quarterback and his own running back and their performance in the Super Bowl. You know, saying that Ben Roethlisberger isn't Peyton Manning, he just gets paid like him. Talking about the interceptions Roethlisberger throws in the Super Bowl.
Let's drop the quote, because I want to be accurate here.
So
Ben Roethlisberger, on the two interceptions thrown by Ben Roethlisberger, James Harrison had this to say. Hey, at least throw a pick on their side of the field instead of asking the D to bail you out again. Or hand the ball off and stop trying to act like Peyton Manning. You ain't that. And you know it. Man, you just get paid like he does. All right, let's talk about Ben Roethlisberger, who, in his first Super Bowl,
sucked. Oh, man.
Came in, and I mean, didn't have a great Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But has more than once proven his ability to win big games.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, hello, certainly. Look at the second Super Bowl they were in, where he won the game with the pass to Santonio Holmes.
Rashard Mendenhall,
a fumble machine, apparently.
Yeah, not really this last season.
300 carries plus and 2 fumbles on the year.
Yeah.
If that's a fumble machine, I would love to know what Adrian Peterson was 2 years ago.
He was a human fumble, I think is how that worked. And, well, no, wow. He's going to make another Adrian Peterson joke, but no.
Don't do it.
You know, where Harrison, I think, has a beef is with the fines. Yes. Because he gets fined more than anyone else on the planet. Some of the fines definitely are questionable. I mean, and I've long said, and I don't know how this would work exactly, but I've long said that if you're going to be throwing out fines, that you've got to have some sort of council of elders or something, like former players from both sides of the ball, some officials, some coaches, some current players. You have to involve the current players. Whatever way this comes out, you got to involve the current players because of stuff like this. Harrison has a legitimate beef. He gets dinged a lot.
That's what I was going to say with Mike Freeman's blog post. As he said, you know, as crazy as Harrison is, and he is, make no mistake about it, bat stir crazy. He's, just out there nuts.
As an example, would you perhaps take lines like, but up until last year, there was no word of me being dirty till Roger Goodell, who's a crook and a puppet, said I was the dirtiest player in the league. If that man was on fire, and I had to urinate to put him out, and I'm changing words
Of course.
I wouldn't. I hate him and will never respect him. That dude?
So, as crazy as he is saying stuff like that, he's got a point. This is the tragedy of it, is that he could be such a great spokesman for how ridiculous the NFL's response to some of these hits has been. When he made the point in the article about his hit on Massaqua, which drew, that started this whole kind of witch hunt as far as big hits go, he points out that the receiver ducks his head into the hit. How on earth can you legislate that? I said it at the time when the NFL put out the video, you know, which was supposedly showing what is a legal hit and not a legal hit. Well, the difference was like 5 inches. All right, you're telling me a referee at the speed this game goes at is going to make that determination live on the field and that the player has no recourse and no, you know, it's just, he totally has a point in regards to if a ball carrier lowers themselves to take on the hit, there is absolutely nothing the defender can do to avoid a head-on-head collision.
Well, don't launch, Aaron. Don't launch.
But he's not launching. That's the whole thing.
I know.
They put together the video that the NFL released last year had a series of hits that they deemed inappropriate. And the only hit that should have been deemed inappropriate was the Merriweather hit, where he went up, and I believe it was a member of the Ravens, that he went and he launched. He left his feet. He launched at the guy's head. That's an illegal hit. That's a dirty hit that has no place in the game of football. But every other hit on that reel has no business being illegal. And that's the thing. Harrison has an absolute point to make, but it's completely lost when he acts as a complete clown when making it.
Well, and this is the thing. You know, it's like he needs a better PR guy or something. Like he needs...
He needs a PR guy.
Yeah, this is actually something I've talked to some trainers about, draft trainer type guys. And a lot of these guys coming in don't ever get training dealing with the media, ever. Yeah. Much less, you know, fans, public. Like they have no idea. And I'm not saying that they're stupid. It's just not something you know until you do it, or unless someone talks to you. There have been a couple times I've been in a room when a veteran player has sat in front of a bunch of incoming rookies and said, "Hey, this is what it's like. This is what it is. This is how you need to conduct yourself." But it doesn't happen all that much, and it doesn't happen nearly enough. And in my opinion, you should have, if you're a trainer, a draft specialist, I'd bring in guys like Bedard, Sam Farmer, the LA Times, Adam Schefter, like anyone, old school, new school, blogger, whatever, and have like a 2 or 3 day seminar where it's just them putting these guys through their paces, explaining what it's like, explaining what their jobs are. Say, listen, this is what I need to do. This is what will make my life easier, and this is how it's going to help you. But most of these guys don't get that training. They get it on the fly. Right. You know, so a guy like Harrison's never, probably, I can't say 100%, but I'm pretty sure, hasn't had anyone sit down and, like, try and really massage how he says things. You know, and I like James Harrison from the standpoint of he is who he is. Like, he's not putting on a show. Right. He's not putting up a false front. He's not a guy you're ever going to hear, James Harrison. He's so full of it. Right. He's not really like that. He's James Harrison.
But to be fair, after he said these things, and it came out in the magazine article this morning, within an hour and a half, there was a story about how he had called Ben Roethlisberger and said the writer had, quote, twisted his words. Come on.
Yeah, I read those words to you guys, or some of them. And, yeah, there's no twisting those words. The writer in Men's Journal did what a good journalist should do, especially when he could sense that there's maybe some heat to it. He used complete sentences. He didn't use synopses. He didn't use, you know, he told me this. He laid out exactly what Harrison said. I mean, and this is where, I mean, see, that's not necessarily Harrison not being Harrison. You know, the article is Harrison being Harrison.
The article definitely is.
The phone call and the leak of the phone call, that was someone calling Harrison going, you're an idiot. Mm. And here's the thing. I said on Twitter at one point, I said, well, I'll tell you what, the locker room for the Steelers is going to be a very interesting story this year. And I had a couple Steeler fans, I had a couple of fellow media people, I had a couple friends of football guys who were all like, nah, you know, it's just revealing what's already there. It's not even going to be a story in a month. You know, Tomlin's great at keeping all these ego in check, which he is. Mm. But here's the thing. Yes, that's in the locker room, maybe. Maybe that's even openly in the locker room. Maybe Harrison has gotten in Roethlisberger's face. Maybe they've come to blows. I mean, if anybody on that team is going to get crap for stuff, Roethlisberger's probably earned it given his offseason shenanigans. He's probably earned some slack again right now because he seems to be on the straight and narrow, but he certainly put the Steelers in an awkward position. I don't know that James Harrison is the guy worth calling him out, but I could see it happening in behind closed doors. But you don't take your laundry and hang it out on the line for everyone to see. You just don't throw your dirty garments out there, and that's where Harrison was wrong. That's inside locker room stuff. Popping off like that publicly, to me, is going to put a strain on that locker room.
It might. I mean, as you point out, I mean, I don't know. The stuff with Roethlisberger that just shocks me is his... It's one thing if he had said something like last offseason when Roethlisberger was going through stuff, very publicly, you know, all the off-season stuff that led to his suspension. But now he's talking about his performance in the Super Bowl. James Harrison, who, ladies and gentlemen, had, let's count them, one tackle in the Super Bowl, which was recorded as a sack. But I'm here to tell you, folks, that sack was because he got pushed to the ground by Scott Wells. Why was he in the middle, you ask? Why is he taking on a center? Because they ran a stunt, because they had to get him away from Chad Clifton, because Chad Clifton was absolutely owning him all game long. So they ran him inside. Wells knocked him to the ground. As he's getting up, Aaron Rodgers steps right into him. So even his tackle, the one play he made all game long, was a total gift. So if I'm Ben Roethlisberger, I'm mailing him a tape of the Super Bowl tomorrow and saying, that's how you played. That's you on the day during the game that you're criticizing me for. So this whole thing of like, you know, will it affect the locker room? I guess I could see it happening. It is the one thing they say you're not supposed to do. But like you said, I mean, it's not like this is anything that the players haven't dealt with before, especially in light of everything that Roethlisberger has gone through in several different off seasons. But if I'm Roethlisberger, I just take it right back and put it right back in his face. I mean, they said today that, oh, everything's fine between them, but you know something's going to happen behind the scenes. But I think that's where it'll stay. And like you said, I think Tomlin will make sure it stays there.
Well, and this is the sort of thing, it would have been much worse if, say, Roethlisberger and Mendenhall had gone at it, or Hines Ward, or Harrison and taking issue with Troy Polamalu, who he apparently loves and is the only person he respects because he is who he is. Awesome. But good for you. I do love me some Troy Polamalu, former Trojan, fight on. But
easy.
Here's the thing. Because they're on separate sides of the ball, there's always a little bit of static between defense and offense. I mean, not always, but I mean, it's pretty true, common on some level. I don't think this will become a big deal, but I think it will be interesting to watch. And if the Steelers stumble, you know, don't think that this won't come up again at some point.
Well, don't you think, I think there is a little bit of validity, something you mentioned that people were telling you earlier today. I think there is a little bit of a vacuum here where we're yes, it's a big deal, and yes, it would probably be a story any other offseason, but today it was a huge story because there's nothing else to talk about.
Nature abhors a vacuum, and so does journalism.
Speaking of journalism, or our meager attempts at it here at Cheesehead TV, I did want to touch on an article you wrote earlier this week in regards to something that was reported by Adam Schefter and Chris Mortensen on ESPN in regards to a timeline that had been quote-unquote leaked to Schefter in regards to what the breakdown is of this new potential CBA and what their thinking is as far as, you know, the crazy shortened offseason we're about to embark on whenever the CBA gets done. The one thing that caught Greg Rosenthal's eye over at Pro Football Talk was a supposed, mandatory reporting date for the rookies. And I wasn't quite sure if this was forever, like every year going forward, or if this was just this year, but you wrote a great story about it, and wanted you to talk a little bit about it.
Sure. Basically, Greg, hat tip to Greg, caught this and thought it was really interesting. What they were essentially saying was that there was indeed a deadline for signing these players, and then, of course, then getting them into camp. And Greg was like, this is really unprecedented. It's fascinating that even this would come up, because never before has anyone tried to put a timeline on rookie signings. I mean, the most timeline is like, hey, let's get this dude in before camp. Oh, that's not working out. Okay, maybe preseason games? All right, no. Jamarcus is still holding out. Oh, God, let's pay him by the third game. I mean, that's about as far as it ever goes. What Greg was saying is like, this is unprecedented. This is something we've never seen before. What might it mean? You know, and he was like, I want to touch on this. I want to think about this and touch on it later. And what I found interesting, riffing off of that, was to me, they have to be, and we've talked a little bit about that a sticking point is the years on the contract for the rookie wage scale, but they have to be relatively close to a wage scale if they're really thinking about this and this is being talked about. Because in my opinion, there's no way in hell that you can have any sort of deadline to sign players if there's not a slotting mechanism for the first 15 to 20 guys. Because otherwise, you're just giving the agents a whole big giant crowbar to pry more money out of the coffers, because they're like, oh, you have to sign us by the 15th or X, Y, and Z happen. Because right. There also has to be some sort of enforcement. Now, what that enforcement would be, I have no earthly idea.
Yeah,
it's, you know, money,
penalty,
picks,
or somehow. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Got a, you know, head coach has got to run through the stadium and boxers, something.
Oh, dear.
But you know there's going to be a penalty. So you're not going to give, you're essentially giving agents a loaded gun if you don't have some sort of slotting mechanism. And now, I don't think there are going to be hard numbers, particularly when they come up with it. They're not going to say right. The first round pick can only earn $30 million guaranteed. There may be a limit or a cap or a percentage or something. Mm-hmm. So there will be some negotiation, because there always is. Because otherwise agents have nothing to do. And agents
God
with nothing.
God forbid.
Agents with nothing to do. I don't know, trouble. Much like players with nothing to do.
Yes.
But to me, this is fascinating, because this really, to me, is a benefit to both players and to the teams. Because the teams get their guys in quickly. They get them in by training camp. I mean, that's probably where the deadline's going to be. They're probably not going to try and force the deadlines for OTAs or anything.
None.
But, so you'll get training camp, which is vital to get rookies in and inundated, and especially the top 15 picks.
I was just going
to
say, especially if you're at the top of the draft and you have a quarterback, how incredibly important is that?
I mean,
we've talked about it every week almost.
Almost any position. In that first round, but especially the top 15, if you're getting drafted, the thought is you're going to come in and contribute very, very quickly. Sometimes a quarterback may be benched for a year or two, but by and large, if you're paying these guys, if you're taking them that high, you expect them to perform pretty darn quick. So you need them in training camp. So the teams, this would make them very happy. Now, you may ask yourself, self or Andrew, because you can ask me too. Maybe you can ask Aaron.
This is not my beautiful house.
Nice. You may ask yourself, well, so what's the benefit of the players? Like now, like why would, if I'm Jamarcus Russell, and I know I'm stealing money, if I'm Sam Bradford, if I'm Matt Stafford, if I'm Mark Sanchez, although Sanchez is kind of a bad example because Sanchez did everything he could to be in camp. Like there's a guy who could have held out for a lot more money and was like, you know what, just, that looks like a good amount of cash, I'm in. New York, I'll make it up in endorsements. There's someone who actually thought that through, by the way. But of course he wasn't in St. Louis, the endorsement capital of the world, right, Sam? But if you are, you know, Stafford, Sam Bradford, Marcell Dareus, like any number of top guys, why do you want this to happen? I mean, it's just one more thing like the slots that you're not liking. I want to hold out and make a little more money. You know, my career is short. Here's the thing. And this is where we talked about the owners kind of giving back a little bit now. This is where this is critical. If they do this, I am firmly behind the concept that the rookie contract should be no more than a lock for 3 years with some options for maybe a fourth and a fifth, depending.
Well, that's not going to happen.
But here's the thing, and this was something Florio talked about at one point as well. 5 years is an awful long time for these guys to get locked up into a contract as it is. And a lot of rookie contracts, especially top contracts, are actually for 4, because that's a giving point. It's like, all right, we'll give you a, you know, right. we'll give you a little less, but you'll get that year back.
Right.
The thing is you know by 3 years for the majority of the positions whether someone is worth that money
who's good and who's not.
Yeah. And by the way, you can cut this guy anytime you want to, and never there's no guaranteed money. You paid them the guaranteed money.
Right.
All right, which is a problem the veterans have. So it's true in perpetuity.
Like, I mean, look at who, like Chris Johnson, I think this year is slated to make $300,000 or something like that. Around that. I don't know what the exact figure is. But you just know this guy's going to hold out as soon as the lockout's over. There's just no way he's playing for $300,000 this year. DeSean Jackson's in this similar situation. I don't remember what it is, but he's got some absurdly low number on his contract this year. And you know he's a star in the making. So in that regard, I'm totally on board with what you're saying. I just think there's no way they give back year four. I think they're gonna from all reports that they've locked in 4-year contracts. It's that fifth year for the first round guys that is the sticking point. There's just no way they're gonna allow 3-year contracts from the owner's side.
Well, I mean, but even a 4-year. I mean, the difference between a fourth and a fifth year to me is pretty significant as well.
It's a monster.
It's
a
monster.
I totally agree with that.
So that's basically what the article was. It would be good because then the players get on the market again quickly or get to renegotiate their contract quicker. So an Arian Foster, who's making peanuts right now, and Matt Forte, we talked about last week why they haven't started negotiating with him before. And by the way, this isn't like these aren't like backup tight ends. You know, these are not like third string left tackles. You know, Chris Johnson's pretty significant. He's the only weapon they have right now. You know, Matt Forte is a huge part of that offense.
Is their whole offense.
Take him away and you got nothing next to nothing with a big dose of nothing. You know, Arian Foster leaves. I mean, at least that's the one situation where at least they have potentially Ben Tate, but they've got Andre Johnson. They've got Owen Daniels. They've got Matt Schaub. But even that, I mean, there's an offense that has struggled without a lead back for years, and they've suffered for it. There are some games when they really needed to run that clock out, and they didn't have a guy until last year. Unfortunately, their secondary gives up a lot of last-minute touchdowns, so that running clock out, you know, 2 seconds is still too much. But so that's essentially the gist of the article is I think it's a win for anyone. And you know what? If I'm the agents, who I'm sure are balking about this too, about the whole slot thing.
You know they are.
If that extra year is big because you get to renegotiate that big contract, and that second contract, that first contract after the rookie contract, is the big contract for the majority of the players.
Right.
So really, you want that to come sooner than later. So that's essentially the article. And again, you know, hat tip to Greg for catching that in the first place, which made me think about this. You can check it out at Cheesehead TV. I go in a little more detail if that's physically possible at this point. But I really do think, you know, when it gets back to it, the owners need to give a little bit on that. You know, even if it's a 3 with an automatic option for a 4, and, you know, something.
Well, it's just, especially if, you know, what they're talking about is the tags are still in place. We don't know to what end, but at least, you know, we're pretty sure the franchise tags are sticking around. If the owners have franchise tags and a 5th year, that's just absurd.
It's absurd now.
Yeah.
It's absurd now. You watch players who are just livid. I mean, the Vincent Jackson thing, and I mean, let's talk about the two most unreasonable human beings on the planet on some level. Vincent Jackson is a little bit of a hothead. AJ Smith, I mean, come on.
The Lord of No Rings.
He's a guy who would, you know, I watched the Captain America trailer, and there's a scene.
I'm sorry. I love it when we geek out on this podcast. It's so awesome. We just had a Lord of the Rings and Captain America reference like in less than 30 seconds. It's awesome.
So I'm watching one of the trailers, and there's Steve Rogers, who, for those of you who are not nerds like me, you know, is Captain America, and it's before he's Captain America, so he's this skinny geek, and there's this big bully just beating on him, and he's like, "You don't know when to give up." You know, that's all you're doing is making him angrier and angrier. You know, all you're doing is giving this guy another reason to stand up and fight you on it. And that's what the owners are doing. They're like beating on the skinny kid, and all it's making him is more and more ticked off. I really think at this point it would behoove them to find a way to do this. I mean, just, you know, the Vincent Jackson, AJ Smith thing. I mean, they're just two guys who won't back down from a fight. Yep. You know, Steve Rogers-like, only neither of them are half as smart as Steve, apparently. Oh, and, you know, in fictional character universe. And we'll have our Batman-Superman argument podcast.
No, don't run away, people. That's never going to happen. Maybe a Marvel-DC argument, but never Superman-Batman argument. One argument we won't have, because we both are firmly behind this gentleman in his statements, on the cover article for Out Magazine. Never thought I'd be talking about Out Magazine on an NFL podcast. But if you have not yet read online or heard about Michael Irvin and the interview he gave out in regards to his brother, who is gay, and Michael went on and on about the need to stand behind the gay community, about his support for gay marriage. And this was the most striking thing to me, was that if anyone in any major sport were ever to come out, how they would have his unconditional support. You can make any argument you want against it. You are allowed your viewpoint, but I absolutely applaud Michael Irvin. I hated him as a Cowboy. I hate him as an announcer on NFL Network. I love the interview he gave to Out Magazine.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how having a friend or relative come out like will open your eyes to, you know, the larger world in some respects. And I don't want to denigrate anyone else's opinion by saying that, so I'm sorry if I did, but it happened anyway, so there you go. Live with it. But here, the thing about, I never thought I would write the words as I did on Twitter. I have so much more respect for Michael Irvin now. You know, here's the thing, and I think it was Florio, it was one of the Pro Football Talk guys, was writing, and by the way, Mike or Greg or anyone who works for them, start giving us money, because we talk about you guys more than you do. But so one of the guys, and I think it was Florio, was saying that he applauds Irvin, he gets it, but it's going to take an incredibly courageous human being and an awful lot more than Michael Irvin's support to make it possible for that to happen in any sport. And part of it is because of guys like David Tyree, you know, who would trade his Super Bowl ring and catch for gay marriage not to exist. I'll say this and say this once, and I don't want to get too political, but the only way gay marriage is harming my household is if, you know, a pair of lesbians with the crowbars come in and start beating me. I mean, that's the only way it's happening. It doesn't affect me. It really doesn't. I mean, there are some financial considerations, tax things, stuff like that, but largely, it's not going to ruin my family. Like, it's not going to ruin most families. You know what? The divorce rates tells me we do that just fine without any help.
Absolutely. Here's the thing about Irvin in the interview, which I found interesting. If you have not read Mike Freeman's book, Bloody Sundays, you have to pick up a copy, if for no other reason than Mike has a whole chapter dedicated to a player who gave him an interview, several interviews, while he was still in the league, who was gay. And to this day, he's never said who it is. He granted him anonymity for obvious reasons. But, you know, this player in the book goes on and on about, you know, the rampant homophobia in the NFL. You know, there's no doubt about that. That's obvious. You just have to listen to DeSean Jackson on the radio to know that that's going on. What I found really interesting in Irvin's interview was his saying that he would have supported, and they would have supported, a gay player when he was with the Cowboys. Michael, I love what you're saying, bro, but there's absolutely no flipping way that's true.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say. And that was what I was saying, you know, the PFT writer was essentially like, there's no way. And part of it is because of the David Tyrese. And it's the same thing with something like Major League Baseball. And there's no way to say this without actually sounding like I'm coming down on something. But there is a very, especially in baseball, very firm Christian presence that is dead set against this in baseball. And there is, to some extent, the same thing in the NFL. But the NFL is even a little more different because of the type of game it is, because of the aggressive nature of it. Exactly. I think it's even more difficult. Listen, like Michael said, like Florio pointed out, like people will tell you, if you're a professional player of any sport, there's probably someone gay who's playing near you, has been near you, has been around you. We can almost guarantee it. Maybe not on your team, but has been on the field with you at some point. And that's probably true for all of the sports. The fact is that it's a bigger part of our culture now than it has before. Now, we could argue about the rightness or wrongness of it. We're not going to do that here. I think at this point, people probably know where we stand. Respect our opinions. We respect yours. But ultimately, like everything else, you know, like at one point when we were having, you know, Martin Luther King marching and, you know, and trying to bring the races together and still struggling to do that to this day. Like, there's got to be a way to integrate something that is actually already a part of our society in a way that makes it part of the society.
Well, it's actions like Michael Irvin just took that will one day, hopefully, lead to even just even an inkling of someone coming out in a professional sport. I don't see that day coming in my lifetime. Maybe it does. I would applaud it. I applaud Michael Irvin, pure and simple. It was a very heartfelt. If you haven't, it's all over the internet. Check it out. It's a fantastic interview and it's a fantastic piece.
Well, and just putting a button on it again, you know, it could be, oh, he could be out doing PR. He could be doing this or that. Michael Irvin is another guy like James Harrison who really does live, like he is Michael Irvin. You know what I mean? When you see or hear Michael Irvin, for good or bad, there he is. You know you're getting 100% pure, the raw feed of Irvin. So you know that he is passionate and believes this. And again, yeah, I mean, and you know what? I don't know that it doesn't cost him something as well doing that. There is some risk to that. It's not as great as, say, if his brother had been a professional football player and came out. Right. It's not that same risk. But there is risk to it as well. And so to step forward and do that, you know, like you said, mad respect for that. I mean, that certainly is, you know, a set of cojones.
It's a brave act.
You know, it is. I mean, I don't want to overplay it.
But it is.
But it is.
It absolutely is. What is not brave, and I really want you to talk about this. I've only kind of like skimmed the stories on it. I haven't really had time to delve into it. But it does involve ESPN, who do obviously cover the NFL. This is a college football item, but I find it A, fascinating, and B, telling of ESPN and how they operate.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and I have long thought, those of you who listen to my stuff, and I have boys. I wanted them old enough to play organized sports for the last few years. Helicopter parents, man. Some of them I call paycheck daddies. It is an amazing, if you've got kids, boys or girls, playing sports, you will run into them. Hopefully you're not one of them, but you will run into them. And helicopter dad is actually my favorite term right now. And this came about, the reason I bring this up, is because of the brouhaha that continues to go on between one ESPN analyst, Craig James, and one former Texas Tech coach, Mr. Coach Leach. Leach has a new book out, and it is about, you know, his coaching career or whatever, but of course centers on his expulsion after 10 years at Texas Tech. 10 years where he took a program that was an also-ran and an afterthought and made it a top 25 power. Now, there are a lot of reasons Leach got fired. And I had a discussion with Mark Annis of Big East Bias on SB Nation and Michael Felder of InTheBleachers.com. And if you are fans of college football, check out both of those sites. Both of them are excellent writers, and as are the staffs they work with. And really, you know, what especially Felder and I were talking about is that, you know, if regardless of Craig James, if they had wanted Leach to stay, he would have stayed. But they were looking to get rid of him. He was making too much money. There are, you know, we were talking before the show, there were boosters complaining.
Lots of incidents.
Yeah, there were some incidents. However, the interesting thing about all this is if this was me, if this was Podunk Joe at WPDVX in New Mexico, or, you know, Joe Radio Guy down even in, you know, like Austin, this never gets the play it did.
No.
Now, for those of you who don't remember this or weren't aware of it, Adam James, who is Craig James' son, was a member of Leach's squad. Allegedly, he was locked in like a utility shed for a while. There was a YouTube video, which later, from what I remember, was actually staged and did not happen.
Right.
So Craig James apparently took issue to this, did not like the apology from Leach, and basically worked his tail off to get Leach fired from Texas Tech. So much so that, like, a lot of those facts that I just told you, i.e. the video's not real, you know, all of that, Not really reported on ESPN.
No, and never covered once on the Worldwide Leader.
And let's just go even further. Those of you budding journalists out here, I'd like you to answer me this question. Is it ethical to have a dude whose son is part of the story covering the story? I'm going to save you the moment of emailing me and say no. Craig James shouldn't have been anywhere near this story. Why? Because he was part of the story. ESPN, though, who is always a little bit more flash and substance over actual substance, and the substance is usually flash, they ran with it. They never even acknowledged it, not even a winking nod. Craig James allegedly called up an assistant coach at Texas Tech in 2009, left him a message that said, "If you have the balls, and I don't think you do, call me back." This guy continued to harass Texas Tech day in, day out, used his pulpit in the media in a vendetta against Leach. Now, I'm not saying Leach is completely blameless, but used his pulpit in a national media level to go after Mike Leach. To me, you know, this is unconscionable. And the fact that it's never been talked about on ESPN, the fact that I'm reading an article by Dennis Dodd on CBS Sports, you know, that I'm reading things that other people on other sites are writing, and it never gets winked at in ESPN, is unconscionable. And maybe I just like to use that word, but it is.
Well, the thing is, too, is they have an omnibusman, someone who's supposed to, you know, they've gone through several since this event occurred, who are supposed to hold their feet to the fire, as it were, for their quote-unquote journalistic standards. And yet, as you say, never once has this been brought up anywhere else on ESPN or anywhere else at all on any level, on any outlet that ESPN owns. It's just shameful. It's just shameful. And it's interesting coming on the heels of The Decision, which was just about like the lowest point in the history of sports journalism. To have these two events back-to-back in a year pretty much tells you where ESPN is these days.
Well, and it's interesting. I'm reading the ESPN book. Those guys have all the fun. And it's fascinating to read through. I'm in the early years. So there's a lot of people who are drunk. And Chris Berman's introductory paragraph, everyone else was like, yeah, you know, I was working at NBC Sports and so-and-so came to me. And they had this crazy idea for a station. And then they described their experience as they started to try and work for ESPN or whatever. Chris Berman was like three paragraphs of like, well, my influences were blah, 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 blah. It was really hysterical. But it's fascinating. But you almost want to write an addendum to that book based on this sort of stuff. Because where ESPN has been is sometimes almost creating as much news as they actually report. And that's what this was. And again, Leach isn't totally... First of all, if Texas Tech had wanted him there, he would have been there. Second of all, if Leach, you know, had run a completely clean program with no problems, he probably still would have been there. But it doesn't take away from the fact that a major news network, the largest sports news network on the planet... has gone through this entire sequence of events and somehow managed not to go, oh, by the way, this is a conflict of interest on every level. I mean, it's amazing to me. It's like, at least when NFL Network kind of shined Adam Schefter on, they had the good grace of keeping him off the TV and not talking about it.
Yep.
Like, they didn't report, Adam Schefter's got a problem with NFL Network. It didn't happen. ESPN, I think, would probably report it at this point. You know, the Bill Simmons stuff that he's gone through, that's come up. Like, ESPN, like, pushes that, you know, away. It's amazing to me. And at some point, you're right. Like, what's the point of having these ombudsmen?
Well, the thing is in regards to ESPN and their relationship with journalism, I find it very interesting that last week or 2 weeks ago, they've had guys, NFL players, in through their, what they call their car wash, where they go on and they visit each set and they're on all their shows. And they're asking them about the NFL Network's top 100 players. And did you vote for it? And things like that. They're mentioning NFL Network on the air. That's huge because ESPN hates NFL Network. Back when they were forming, the league was shopping around the rights to the idea of an NFL Network. They were in talks with ESPN. Things broke down, and you know, things happened the way they ended up. And now, ESPN and NFL Network are always at loggerheads. So for them to even mention NFL Network on the air was surprising. But the reason they're doing it is because there's some hint of impropriety with the NFL Network's top 100 players, which is just a joke coming from an entity such as ESPN. For ESPN even to hint at someone, the problem with someone else's journalistic integrity is just laughable.
Hey, hold on. I got a phone call coming in. Mm-hmm. Oh, hi, Pot. It's Kettle. He says you're black. You know, just to put a button on this, too, because we're coming swiftly to a close of today's show, and no, we're not going 4 hours. I argued for it, but no. But the fact of the matter is that I've talked to some journalists who either are close to people at ESPN, some people who are at ESPN in some capacity. And, you know, one thing that a lot of guys face right now is break it first, don't break it right. And that's sort of where a lot of today's instant, right now, be first mentality is. And across the board, report it. I don't care if it's right, just make sure it sizzles. ESPN is a huge reason for this, as is Twitter and Facebook. But ESPN is a motivator behind this. They are not the only criminals when it comes to it, but they are certainly guys who have probably abused it more than almost anyone else, and this is just another example in some ways to that.
So ESPN, if you're listening, call us and buy our podcast.
Yeah, we really love you guys. We're big fans.
So that'll do it for this week's edition of The Hard Count. As always, big thanks to my co-host with the mo-host, Andrew Garda. I'm Aaron Nagler here at Cheesehead TV. Thanks so much for listening. See you all next week.
You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!